My name is Simon Perry. I'm here for the PAX People Project, Oral History Project. And today is the 7th of June, 2024. And we're in Ryde. And we're with James Pellow today. James, can you tell me the year and place of your birth?
1955. Ryde. So not very far away.
I said I was in Ryde, but I didn't say I was on Ryde on the Isle of Wight, which of course we should say. So you were born in the town that we're in?
Yes, Pelhurst Road.
Okay.
It was a nursing home.
And how was that? What about mum and dad? What were the...
In what way?
Well, which year were they born and what did they do?
Oh, gosh. My dad was born in 1912. And... in fact, went over on D-Day. So that's rather applicable at the moment. Mm. And my mum, I think she was born in 1915 or 18. Can't remember. But they've both been gone a long time. My mum's been gone 40 years and my dad 30.
And what do they do during the day?
My dad was a gardener. They used to call it a jobbing gardener, which meant that he did gardens all over the place, you know. And latterly, before he retired, worked at Polar's, the nursing home, residential home in Newport, which is no more.
And then growing up, you grew up in Ryde?
Yes.
Which school did you go to?
I went, first of all, to Play Street Lane Infant School. And then I went to Swanmore Primary School, then to Bishop Lovett.
And how were those days? Are they enjoyable days?
Yes, I just drifted through them. I wasn't career minded. I wasn't. I just did it, you know.
Yeah, there was no option, was there?
No. I did all right, I think, but.
And then leaving school, what did you do after school?
Well, I first of all went to the Technical College in Newport to do a catering course, which I did for a year. And then I was so good that they recommended I go over to Highbury in Portsmouth and did another year there. And then that was the end of my catering career.
You decided to draw a line under it?
Yeah, I don't know why, but I did.
How was it going to Highbury?
Because you
had to cross the Solent to get there. And
yeah.
It's a fair hike from the boat, isn't it, to Highbury?
Well, yes. But I was young, wasn't I?
Yeah, I guess that's the sort of thing you just do in those days. Yeah.
Didn't think anything of it.
And what about mixing with those mainlanders? What was that like?
Can't remember.
And then, so that was catering college, and you figured, that's not for me.
Yeah.
And then where did you go?
Then I did a couple of years or so at Burton Tailoring in Newport. Montague Burton, the tailor of taste.
I had forgotten it had tailoring at the end of it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And I've got coat hangers in my wardrobe from 50 years ago, because... while I was there, they decided, I think, to go to plastic coat hangers. So the wooden ones were discarded, and I've got quite a few of them here.
I guess in those days, plastic seemed terribly modern.
Probably, yes.
Wooden seemed old-fashioned.
No.
Yeah.
I do remember very little about Burton's, but I do remember the... fuel shortage business in the 1972 or three, and so we only had electricity part of the day, not all day. So being the junior, I had to fill up the hurricane lamps and paraffin lamps, whatever they were, and that's how the customers saw themselves around.
Did that impact people's shopping? I mean, apart from, did they worry about only half seeing what they were buying?
Possibly, yes. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, not being the manager, I suppose I wasn't that concerned about, you know,
the
trade, which I would have been if I'd been the manager. I do remember only one other incident, and that was we had to use a tape measure, of course, to measure people's waists and everything. It was quite formal in that way. And I remember this couple came in, and well, middle-aged couple, and I measured the man's waist and told him what it was, and the wife just looked at him and said, "Oh, Fred!" And that was it.
Well, as in, she was pleased or disappointed?
No, disappointed, I think.
Wow, okay. So that was sort of got you into the early days of fashion, I guess.
Well, I suppose so, yes.
Gentlemen's clothes.
Yes, and then, of course, in, I think, 75, Pax opened the Cross Street shop, and because I lived in Ryde, it made sense to apply for that job rather than going to Newport every day.
Right. And that was in which department?
Well, first of all, it was the men's department, which was downstairs. Men's wear department, I should say. And then, after a few years, I suppose maybe because of my catering training, I transferred to the Coffee Bean upstairs, the coffee shop.
And that, oh yeah, well, I'm looking forward to getting on to that, because I understand that was quite a social hub.
It was, yes. It certainly was.
So, it made a natural transfer, you going to the men's wear department, menswear.
Yeah.
Was that was specifically, that it was called menswear rather than just the men's department?
Well, I think so, yes. I suppose we called it the men's department, but officially it was probably the menswear, yes.
And what was the structure of the organisation like? Was it quite formal or quite hierarchical?
Oh, I think it was, but not... I don't think it was stuffy, probably because we weren't the Union Street shop, which was far older, probably was more formal. That was, of course, the ladies' department and also originally the children's department, I think, before it moved to Cross Street. But Cross Street was... Because it was a new shop in many ways, it was less historic in terms of, you know, the don't include this, it's rubbish. But no, and I think also because the people I was working with in the children's department was next door to me. In on the ground floor, and they were delightful. I spent a lot of time talking to them. Mrs. Pope was the head of the children's department, and she was an absolute delight. So that kind of prevented it being all sort of hushed and formal and okay.
Yeah, that the people that worked there were people... was there a lot of people? Because we'd heard previously... of, I think, at the Union Street one, mm-hmm. at sometimes up to 70 people. That's probably working across all the shops.
Possibly, yes.
Were there a lot of people at the one in the
yes,
Cross Street?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And that was part of the offering, if you like, was people being looked after one-to-one.
Oh, yes, definitely, yes. You had... It wasn't like, are you being served, but... that was the formal way, you know, you approached the customers and asked them if you could help and all that kind of thing, you know. So are you being served? But, you know, it was that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And we had spoken to somebody else who said when they first joined, they weren't allowed to talk to customers because they were too junior. They sort of hadn't learned...
Oh, right.
...the approach.
Yes.
Was the training that you got at PAX different to how things had happened at Burton?
No, I don't think so. But because I was really, most of the time in the men's department, I was on my own. Therefore, I had to talk to the customers, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, yeah, right, right. And what was the particular way of approaching them then? Was it do you just sort of, hello, you know, not hello, mate, how's it going?
No, it certainly wasn't that. Uh-huh. Well, it was, perhaps you'd call it formal now. I can't remember. There wasn't a particular approach like, are you being served? It wasn't that phrase, you know. It was, a smile and a good morning, you know, can I help at all? That kind of thing, you know, just a friendly way of doing it.
Yeah. And you got to know, was it sort of the same people coming back in regularly?
Do you know, I cannot remember a single customer.
Really?
No.
Okay. I guess there's so many people pass through, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because, well, the men's department was, as I say, on the ground floor, but you didn't walk through the men's department only to the ladies' loo. That was to the office, so that was for staff, obviously. But you didn't get people walking through all the time to the next department because mm-hmm. there wasn't a next department.
Right.
You only got, as I say, the office people going upstairs and ladies going mm-hmm. to the loo.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember one occasion which appealed to my sense of humour. This lady came in with her mother, elderly mother, and in a very loud voice she said, come on, mother, we're going to the lavatory. And I thought that was very PAX.
So what were the type of clothes that were being stocked then? Was it formal suits or casual or...?
Well, suits, certainly suits, yes. And so I suppose in a way it was more formal than it would be today, certainly, yes.
But was it a mixture of suits and sort of weekend wear?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who would choose the stock?
Well, that would be Mr. Guy, David Guy. He was... the buyer, because that's what we had in those days. We had buyers, yes. So the Mrs. Pope, for instance, in the children's department, she was the buyer. And so the reps would come round maybe twice a year, something like that, to show the buyers the next season's range with the cloth swatches and that sort of thing, and which I wasn't involved in, of course. And then that would be ordered for the next season. So, and I do remember, I don't know why, but Miss Keeling was the head of the ladies' coats department, and that was in Union Street. But for some reason, she came over to my department one day to meet the rep for buying the next season's range, and I don't know why it was in my department, but so I kind of had an ear to listen to what was going on, and this comes down to my sense of humour really, and I remember it to this day. She was buying fur coats, and he was showing her the swatches, and she picked one up, and she sniffed it and she said, yes, she said, well, it looks like skunk and it feels like skunk and, oh, by golly, it is skunk.
Wow.
And I thought it was so charming. she was an absolute delight, you see, and that's what made it so good.
What was the reaction of the rep?
I can't remember. He'd probably heard it before.
was it actually skunk?
No.
Oh, okay.
She was just making a joke. You know?
How well? I mean, one thing we're thinking with this project is future generations not really understanding, or not really the way that shopping was then and shopping is now, being different.
Yeah.
And. How were the clothes laid out? Were they, was it on hanger? Everything was on a hanger?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And certainly at Burton's, because again, I was the junior, and every morning I had to go along the rails and make sure that all the hangers were level and, you know, the shoulders of the coats were all level along the rail.
Right.
And of course, jumpers and shirts were folded neatly, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there was a formula to the folding.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Right. I mean, I've got sort of memories of, I don't know why this has come to mind, but of Benetton in the, I guess it must be in the 80s or the 90s.
Oh, yes.
And the people that work there seem to be forever refolding the jumpers.
Yes.
Was there's that, I guess as soon as somebody comes in.
Yes.
Picks a jumper up, it's yes. got to be re-put down.
Yes. Yeah.
So when people walked in, the experience for them was leave them to browse for a little while. What was the, and then approach them, or so you sort of get to suss out what someone's intentions are.
Again, probably in the ladies' departments, the more formal they would be approached. But I can't ever remember a formula, you know. I think I would probably smile at them and say hello, you know.
Mm. I guess it's that it becomes so ingrained.
Mm.
Then why would you even think about it? It's just natural.
Mm.
And one of the things that's been spoken about a lot is women's wedding dresses.
Oh, yes.
Did you have a section for wedding?
We did, yes. Not again, I think that was in the Union Street shop.
So the Union Street shop was running in parallel.
Oh, yes, Cross Street yes, one. Yeah.
What was the reason they went for the Cross Street one then?
Just expanding, I think.
Right. And what about the, you mentioned some people who worked, you said the children's department was next door to the men's one.
Mm.
Was that a noisy department, the children's one? Or
No.
Okay.
No, it was delightful, you know.
And the people that worked in that department were lots of sort of fun and giggles.
Oh, them. Yes, yes. As I say, if my department was quiet, I would be talking to them a lot, you know. Mm. And I'd remember, again, another incident. I remember, because obviously the children's department was right by the main doors out onto Cross Street. And on one occasion, I was talking to the staff there and Mrs. Pope, and it was just this way of, the timing was perfect. Mrs. Pope was over by the front doors, and which probably were open because it was summer. And at the moment she was there, somebody walked past on the pavement and belched very loudly. And of course, we instinctively looked across at Mrs. Pope. And because she was such a delight, she just burst out laughing and said, "Well, it wasn't me."
These sort of fragments of memory, I'm constantly fascinated.
Well, yes. By yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
How these things get remembered and retained. And
yes.
It's fascinating, isn't it? That sort of 2-3 seconds.
Yes, absolutely. And it's still there in my head today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And so how long were you in the men's department?
Do you know, I'm not too sure. It wasn't very long. I can't honestly remember when I transferred.
And what you said, can I do something else, please? Or
I think, if I remember rightly, they closed the men's department. I may be wrong on that, but I think they did. And so somehow naturally transferred, yeah.
And the people that came in to shop in there, is there a sort of a type of person that came in? Or, I mean, you say you can't remember individual people, but was there a...
I suppose there was. I cannot remember, to be honest.
Mm, okay. And were the, I guess one thing that would be interesting is, you mentioned Mr. Guy being the buyer for them. Who else was involved with the organisation of the shop?
Well, of course, Mrs. Barrow was very much involved, and Mrs. Moody. Gillian Moody. They were the family, and when I first arrived, a Mrs. Guy Senior, the mother, she was not probably so much involved because she was elderly, but she certainly was the figurehead.
Hmm. And some people have said that they sort of struck fear into them.
Oh, I think possibly, yes. Yes.
Firm but fair was what we've heard.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So you didn't have any direct dealings because you were the men's department?
No, I suppose I didn't. I don't have any sort of nasty memories of them, you know, sort of that has scarred me. You know, I just enjoyed it.
Well, that seems to be, from the people we've spoken to so far, the Firm But Fair came out, but also these people sort of fashioned my life.
Yes, yes, yes.
In the way that they gave me an opportunity. Mm. And it was, you know, that set me on a path forevermore.
Yes, yes.
So you then went to Coffee Bean.
Yes.
Is it the Coffee Bean? Or?
It was called the Coffee Bean, yes.
Which floor was that on?
That's on the first floor in Cross Street, yes.
So you went, to get to it, you went through the front entrance and up the stairs?
Well, you could go up the main stairs through the shoe department and then through to the Coffee Bean, or there was a small staircase at the back which went out onto the back entrance by the car park there.
And the shoe department was men's and women's shoes?
No, just women's.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the men of Ryde wore wonderful suits but no shoes?
Oh, I suppose so, yes. But there would have been other men's shoe departments, shoe shops, yeah.
Right, right. So the Coffee Bean transfer, that was an exciting change for you?
It was, yes, it certainly was. I mean, it was a lot busier than the men's department.
Yeah, you're excited to move to the Coffee Bean?
Yes, yeah, very much so.
Has somebody left for you to take that position?
Can't remember.
So there you were, da-da!
Yeah, yeah.
Coffee Bean.
Yeah.
And then what happened? What was the... Did you reorganise things?
No. I used to make flapjacks, I think they were. Because we used to do the cooking there, you know, we didn't do full meals or anything like that. But I do remember making these flapjacks, which became quite successful.
I love that. That's great, isn't it? It becomes a thing.
Yes, and I was speaking to somebody only the other week who worked there as well, and. She reminded me, and it's quite true, because the coffee was in the Kona coffee machines, and we used to go around the tables with the coffee jug in one hand and the milk in the other, and pour them at the table. And this friend remembered, and I remember this terrible phrase, you know, going around the table and say, half and half.
So milk and coffee.
Yes, half and half. Wasn't quite like that, but.
So people got free refills, did they?
No, not, we served them at the table.
Okay.
They didn't come up to the counter. Okay. Only to specify a pastry, as Victoria Wood would say.
So how many tables were there? What do they call them? Covers or whatever the phrase is these days?
You know, I'm not sure how many there were. It wasn't huge. Certainly wasn't huge, but...
And bustling.
Yes, yes. A lot of regulars. So that was lovely.
Mm. So it becomes a social hub of people seeing
Coffee Bean. Oh, yeah, very much so. Mm.
I mean, that must feel good to create a community.
Oh, yes, yes. I do remember one elderly customer. She was not one of the regulars, but she used to come in now and again. And I remember she had baked beans on toast. And I imagine because she didn't have very good teeth, when I cleared it away, she'd sort of left all the shells from the beans on the plate.
Wow.
What a lovely memory.
That's quite some effort.
Yes.
What is that, sort of a knife and fork operation?
I don't know. I didn't watch. Uh-huh.
Yeah, God, that's some dedication to the cause.
Yeah. And again, talking about memories, I remember, and I don't know whether I was actually working. I don't think I was working in the coffee bean at this time, but I was up there for some reason. And it was when Virginia Wade won Wimbledon in 1977. And we were there. I think we'd listened to it on the radio. So, gosh, you know that. And I can see myself standing by the window in the coffee bean. And we were talking about that. So
chatting about Virginia Wade.
Yeah.
What was so memorable about her winning?
Well, because that was 1977. And of course, it was the Jubilee year, and so the Queen presented her with the trophy, the plate, and but also, it was so rare for a British woman player to win Wimbledon.
Right.
Nobody since Anne Jones in I think 68. I think it was. I may be wrong.
So that in a Jubilee year.
Oh yes, yeah. It was a great boost to British morale. And of course, Virginia Wade had tried for so long, right, you know, to get there.
So that was something you'd have the radio playing?
No, I don't know. No, we didn't. But I think I can't remember, but it wasn't always on. The radio wasn't always on, but it was...
It was such a thing of the
yes,
public
attention. Yes, it was, yes. Yes.
Right. So I'm just sort of trying to think about how, was it something that the community sort of naturally engendered itself, or did you do things to make it convivial in there, or make people... I mean, maybe it's just a natural thing that you then, when you're running a place, people become attracted to it and you build customers that way.
Yeah, I think so. Reputation, I suppose, is the word, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't, you didn't do anything sort of deliberate, it's just you being you.
Yes, I think so, yeah. Just, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how long were you at the Coffee Bean for?
Till I think it was 1988, and I was some customer, I don't know who it was, but nominated me for shop assistant of the year from the Daily Mail in 1988.
Wow!
So I have the badge.
Oh, you won?
No, I didn't win, but I've got the badge as nominated.
Goodness!
And I never heard another thing, you know, but.
How lovely.
Yes, I was nominated.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And I've got a photograph of me, the very first comic relief year, which I forget when it was, but it was probably around about then. And I've got a picture of me in the coffee bean with the coffee jug in one hand and the milk in the other hand and a red nose on. So that was as far as it went.
Right.
It was all rather new then. Comic relief.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, are you ready for your half and half?
Yeah, ready, yes. Half and half. We didn't say it like that.
So the flapjacks were a boon.
Yes, I think it was oat and date, I think. Ooh. Flapjacks. Don't know what got me onto them, but...
Right. And what other food was served?
Well, scones. There was one of the other girls who worked there was Elizabeth Taylor.
The Elizabeth Taylor?
Yeah, no. But I don't think so. She never talked about Richard Burton, you know. But so I don't think it was, no. Yeah, but she would make the scones okay. in the morning, and but
so it was tea and cakes rather than sandwiches or what sort of food was served?
You know, again, I cannot remember whether we, as I said earlier, we didn't do full meals. You know, it was a very small kitchen. But certainly, well, it was a coffee shop like you have Costa nowadays. You know, it was the forerunner of that. Really, It wasn't a cafe restaurant kind of thing.
There's none of your cappuccinos or any of that stuff. It was, as you said, poured caramel coffee.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, I guess tea, coffee.
Yeah.
Cakes. So when the flapjacks inevitably ran out in the day, was there riots in the streets? Or?
Oh, I'm sure there were.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
But disappointed customers.
Yes.
Well, they just got there earlier the next
day. Yes, yes.
And were they the daily visitors?
Yes,
or?
Yeah, there were daily ones, yes, yes.
I mean, that's an amazing little social, not a social network in the way it's used these days, but that, and they, all of the people, did they build relationships between each other?
Yes, they must have done, yes.
So it was a sort of a chat shop?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's, I think that's, I just, it seems wonderful for you to have created that.
Well, I didn't create it exactly, but it was lovely to be part of it, certainly, yes. Yeah.
And I remember you saying 88 you left the Coffee Bean. When did you move to it?
Again, I can't quite remember the year, but I might have a record of it somewhere, but I cannot quite think when it was.
But it was like 5 years?
Yes,
or,
something like that, yeah.
Right, okay. And what led you to leave?
Well, it closed, of course.
I've got the whole of the shop?
Yes, yes. I've got the letter saying that.
What was the feeling when you learnt that it was going to close?
Obviously, we were sad about it, but I can't remember whether it was expected. I don't know, but it was sad. Yeah.
And I guess all of those people who had that as a social centre lose that as well. Did they transfer somewhere else in Wright?
Possibly, yes. And of course, we had at Christmas, we had the Father Christmas grotto. That's the word, grotto. And I think originally it was in the Union Street shop, but then we had it in Cross Street at the top of the main stairs. It was between one department and the shoe department. It was, this section was converted into a Father Christmas grotto, and that was Sue Arthur, who I mentioned earlier. She was head of the window dressing and all that, and an incredible designer she was, and she created this grotto. And I think it was 1988, I was Father Christmas, which was quite good. And apparently, I understand the costume is still around, the Father Christmas costume. And I've got photographs of me in it. And I just remember sitting in there, and the children would come in one by one and talk about what they wanted for Christmas. And I remember one little girl even though I had this big white beard, she went out and I heard her say to her mother, "That's my Sunday school teacher." So,
wow.
That blew the gaff, didn't it?
Well, was it? Was it you?
Yes.
All right, you
yes.
were the Sunday school teacher yes. as well.
Okay. So, and I mean, I think, if I remember rightly, I did recognise her, obviously, but I couldn't say anything. And then one year, for some reason, we had the Father Christmas Grotto in the men's department. And so, and it wasn't me, but we had this chap playing Father Christmas, and I do remember I had to sort of look into the grotto. If a child appeared to see Father Christmas, I'd have to sort of slyly look into the grotto to make sure he wasn't asleep, because if it was quiet, he might drop off, or he might be sitting there with a mug of coffee, and so I'd have to sort of alert him to the fact that there was somebody on the way.
That shatters the illusion.
Well, it does. To see Father Christmas drinking a cup of coffee is... Oh, and with the beard pulled down, of course.
Right.
So that it didn't get covered in coffee. That's,
okay.
That does break the...
yeah.
The illusion.
So is it, what's that like, being Father Christmas?
I loved it, yes. Yes.
It's a constant stream of children
yes,
throughout the day.
Yes, yeah.
And they sort of, did they, I guess there was, all of them wanted the present of the year, or what was the
I can't remember what they wanted, but we had a sort of a little bran tub kind of thing, and they would take a little gift from there, you know, and when they went out.
Did it feel like an honour to be selected as a...
I think so, yeah. It was fun. It was fun, yeah.
That's a feeling that I've had, is that the relationship between the people that work there was pretty tight.
Yes, very much so.
How would you describe the sort of the workforce sounds too formal? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there was a... camaraderie, I suppose, is the word, but we were all friends. You know, there was the fact that one person was head of the department and the others were juniors. There was that not class system. I don't mean that, but obviously that there were roles that you had to respect. But we were all good friends.
Was there the equivalent of Christmas parties where everyone got together?
Gosh, that's a question, isn't it? I can't remember, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm just thinking whether Santa had a role at those as well.
No, I don't think so.
For the people that came in, well, I sort of touched on this before, but that the experience of shopping at that time, can you describe that?
Do you know, I can't really.
Because you're on the other side of it, I guess.
Yeah, but it was also, it didn't seem unusual, or was that was how it was everywhere. I suppose there were, yes, there were boutiques and shops like that sort of thing, but the vast number of clothing shops were fairly formal, and that was just the way it was. It now, of course, looking back, it probably looks a bit stuffy, and because it's not like that anymore. But then it was, yeah. And of course, dare I say it, it was cash or check, you know, no cards.
Right. Yes, of course, that was a time when you bought something, you had the money to buy
yes,
it there.
Yes,
and then,
yes.
Yeah. That's a massive difference, isn't it?
It is.
With plastic, or not even plastic anymore. Within theory, anyone can buy anything. I mean, it used to be called on the Never Never, didn't it?
Yes.
When
people... Oh, yeah, and of course, we did have customers who had accounts at PAX, and so their purchase would go on their account. I forget how they identified themselves as having an account, but the office upstairs sorted all that out.
And that was just the convenience. It wasn't that they needed the credit. It was just
No. I think it was just, yes. And I think it was probably nice to know that they were not special, but treated, you know, as friends of PAX, you know, because they had an account, and that meant a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I guess you have to be significantly regular.
Yes, I guess so, yes. Yes.
Yeah. The people that you met there, have you continued the relationship with them?
Only one or two. It's so long ago. a lot of them have gone, of course, but one or two, yeah. Because I've had this flat for 30 years, but I've only been back 2 years. Before that, I was in London for 20 years. So I lost touch with a lot of people, you know.
That was after the Coffee Bean?
Yes, yes.
So when the doors closed?
Well, I didn't go to London straight after the Coffee Bean, but no, the last 20 years I've been in London, yeah.
What was the shift to London for?
I went to drama school. That was in 2002. And just for a year. So that was kind of... And then various addresses in London from then on.
Working on theatre?
Yeah. Not necessarily in London, but other places. I do the summer down in Devon, in Sidmouth.
Oh, that continues?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. The Sidmouth Rep, which is weekly rep, 12 weeks. And this is my 20th year this summer. And it is the last theatre in the country that does weekly rep. There are a few that do fortnightly rep or the occasional rep, you know, but we do 12 plays in 12 weeks, and yeah.
A dear friend of ours used to do the same.
Mm.
And him describing, I'm sure you've got the same experience. It sounds unbelievably intense.
Well, it certainly was to begin with, because 2004 was my first year, and in those days it was you were employed for the whole 12 weeks, and you were either in a part on the stage or backstage doing lights or props or something. And during the day you would be rehearsing next week's play, and then in the evening you'd be performing this week's play, etc., you know. And so it could be quite intense, yes.
You've got to hold two plays in your head the whole
time. Yes, and you were only given your next part the week before, so you had the weekend to learn it.
That sounds crazy.
Well, it kind of was, but it got people sort of into that quick learning process. You know, you didn't have chance to spend a few days mulling it over. You know, you got on with it, and you just turned up at the first rehearsal knowing your lines, or most of them, you know, and that was it. But I suppose it was a little difficult if during the day you were rehearsing a farce and then in the evening you were performing a thriller. You know, your brain might get a bit muddled up.
Yeah.
But it's nowadays, for the last 10 years or so, you get employed for the plays you're in, so you're not there the whole 12 weeks, and you get the casting ahead of time. So right. I already know the ones I'm doing in August and September, and yeah.
Why did that change?
I think it was just the way things go. A lot of actors found that committing themselves to 12 weeks, you know, in the West Country, away from London, they might miss an opportunity to do something else, you know. And also, they employ lighting people and scenery and props people, you know, separate to the actors. So you concentrate on the acting, you know.
Oh, I see. So you don't have to do the backstage stuff.
Well, you might have to help, yeah. But, yeah, because you're part of a team, obviously.
So that seems, well, maybe not a big change. Maybe the Coffee Bean was theatre.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Were you doing amateur dramatics or anything
like that? I was, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, that's me up there on the wall.
Okay, so when you weren't at PAX, you were there, you were doing other theatrical stuff,
yes,
on the island?
Yes, I started doing amateur dramatics, yeah. Mm. And then in the 90s, I got involved at Shanklin Theatre with the summer season, doing various things, yeah.
And what was the life on Shanklin Theatre like?
Love it. I still go back now. I still do things there now. Last Christmas, I was in the pantomime, and I love it. It's a lovely theatre, and I mean, all credit to them. They run it so well and have so many good shows and names there. You know, it's really good. It's buzzing.
Yeah, so the schedule is full, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Was there anything that we haven't spoken about you think we should have spoken about to do with PAX?
To do with PAX? I don't think so.
Okay.
Again, this is another rep anecdote. Mrs. Pope, as I said, Mrs. Pope was the buyer for the children's department, and I do remember on one occasion, because as I said before, she was a delight, such a sense of humour, and this rep came to her and showed her next season's range, and I get the feeling he was a little bit pompous perhaps, and he said to her that he had a boat, you know, he had his own boat. And I remember Mrs. Pope, quick as a flash, because obviously Ride, you know, looking out on the Solent. And so I imagine in order to sort of, let me start that again. Mm-hmm. This rep was quite pompous, I think, and he was telling her how he had his own boat. And as quick as a flash, Mrs. Pope said, "Oh, yes, well," she said, "they're two a penny out here." And that appealed to me. I thought, well, that was him put in his place.
She sounds like a real character.
She certainly was. She certainly was. She was an absolute delight to work alongside, you know.
Is she still around?
No, sadly not, no.
Yeah, well,
no.
I guess it's those, yeah, that's naturalistic humour, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Reactive.
Yes.
Maybe these days she'd be doing stand-up.
Oh, very possibly, I don't know, yes.
Yeah, that's good. Anything else do you think we should chat about?
I can't think of anything else, to be honest.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.